Hello and welcome to Sandy by the Sea, a snapshot of life from the island at the end of England. In this programme, we catch up with local singer-songwriter Loz Bridge and talk to him about some of his musical influences, the challenges of playing live, and the growing music scene here in Portsmouth. We also explore some of the themes and passion behind his new EP, Witches. Loz Bridge, welcome to the programme.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
I first became aware of you very recently when I went to see Fionn Regan.
Yes, I've got to say I'm a bit concerned now I've been pronouncing his name wrong. I've been calling him Fionn Regan.
Oh.
Maybe I've got that wrong.
I think he, yeah.
That's why he snubbed me probably on the night.
He probably, not really. That's why he doesn't respond to your emails. But you were playing support.
That's right.
For Fionn. Yep. And tell me how that came about and tell me how you got started in terms of playing music and playing music live.
Well, the night itself came about because I've done a couple of shows for the Wedge of Dreams, that for the guy who promotes there before. It's quite a big deal playing the Wedge of Dreams. It's up there in terms of venues, in terms of ports. So every time you get the call from do you want to play the Wedge of Dreams, that's quite exciting, really.
It's quite a growing venue as well, isn't it?
It is a growing venue, yeah. It's...
Hello and welcome to Sandy by the Sea, a snapshot of life from the island at the end of England. In this programme, we catch up with local singer-songwriter Loz Bridge and talk to him about some of his musical influences, the challenges of playing live, and the growing music scene here in Portsmouth. We also explore some of the themes and passion behind his new EP, Witches. Loz Bridge, welcome to the programme.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
I first became aware of you very recently when I went to see Fionn Regan.
Yes. I've got to say, I'm a bit concerned now I've been pronouncing his name wrong. I've been calling him Fionn Regan.
Oh.
Maybe I've got that wrong.
I think he, yeah.
That's why he snubbed me probably on the night.
He probably, not really. That's why he doesn't respond to your emails. But you were playing support.
That's right.
For Fionn. Yep. And tell me how that came about and tell me how you got started in terms of playing music and playing music live.
Well, the night itself came about because I've done a couple of shows for the Wedge of Dreams, that for the guy who promotes there before. It's quite a big deal playing the Wedge of Dreams. It's up there in terms of venues, in terms of ports. So every time you get the call from do you want to play the Wedge of Dreams, that's quite exciting, really.
It's quite a growing venue as well, isn't it?
It is a growing venue, yeah. But it's got some reputation behind it, so it's always quite a thrill to get offered to play there. So I definitely wanted to do it. I'll be honest with you, I didn't really know a lot about Fionn, but I looked him up, and obviously it's a name you've heard here and there, and then to see that he was being supported by Danny and the Champions of the World, who come with quite a fearsome reputation as well, that was fantastic. So yeah, that's how it came about. I wasn't going to turn down the chance of playing.
Well, quite right too.
Yeah.
Tell me how songwriting and performing came into your life.
I've been playing since I was about 10, playing music. You know, I'm a piano player, really. That's that's how I started. Yeah, I've been playing ever since I can remember. I started writing my own songs, I think, when I was about 18, something like that. And I've travelled about a place and been all over, and that's changed and morphed over a few years. I've been in bands like everyone does. I started being in bands and that sort of changed. And over the last sort of 10 years, really, it's taken for me to discover what I want to be doing. I feel like I'm there now, you know.
Tell me about the first band you were in. What kind of...
My first band I was in was at college when I was 18, and they were called... I can't remember. We might have to come back to that. But it was a covers band, and we played all sorts of Billy Idol and you know, all sorts of things like that, 80s soft rock.
Some of the classics.
Yeah. I'll tell you something as well. That was the first band I've been in. I really didn't know what I was doing. I had no competition at the... It was like a college band, so the teacher said, who wants to be in a band? And, you know, it'll look good on your CV or whatever. You know, you'll pass the course if you join my band, kind of thing. So I said, yeah, all right, I'll go for it. And I had no competition. I was the only keyboard player in the... There were, like, you know, 30 guitarists, two singers and me. And so I got the job without even having to audition. And I was pretty shocking looking back on it now, but I...
And tell me how you ended up in Portsmouth.
Well, there's quite a bit of a journey there. I'm from Preston originally in the northwest, and I moved when I was 19 over to Amsterdam. I lived in Amsterdam for 3 years until I was 22, just sort of having fun, and then came back to to Preston for only a 6 month break. I was going to get some money together and then move on, go abroad again. But then I met up with an old friend of mine who was a bass player. And during that time, when I was away in Holland, I'd started writing music. So I showed him some songs and we said, well, let's get a band together. And then he said, well, there's only really one choice for a drummer. It's our old friend Matt, who's a drummer who lived down in Portsmouth by that time. So we sort of up sticks and moved down to Portsmouth. That was 2003. So I've been here ever since. Yeah.
And how would you say geography in sort of influences your music or affects your music? Because obviously the southeast corner and the northwest are quite starkly different in many ways.
Do you know what? I'm not so sure it does. I think maybe travelling a lot maybe affects your music. I think your attitude to travel affects your music. You have to be quite an independent sort of mindset to do that, to up sticks and move to a new place. But I'm not sure if where you're at actually affects your music. I suppose it does in terms of what's around you, but then, to be honest, I try and consciously make an effort to ignore what's around me, or not ignore it, but in sense of if everybody's doing something, I don't want to be doing that. You know, I think that's quite important. So it probably does subconsciously, but I would say it's more the fact of moving on that probably gives you music a certain independence. And
tell me about some of your musical influences, because looking at some of your web presence, if you like, and Facebook and MySpace,
yeah,
you cite people like Tom Waits and Leadbelly and Paul Simon and Radiohead, and that's quite an eclectic mix. Obviously, you kind of, there's probably one of those that stands out more than others. But
yeah, Tom Waits is my big influence. I think Tom Waits is maybe the first sort of artist that I really sort of fell in love with and was mine, completely mine. Do you know what I mean? Completely separate than sort of my parents' tastes or anything. A lot of those influences come. My dad's a big music fan. Paul Simon, all that stuff. He was really into. But when I was living in Holland, my boss over there got me into Tom Waits. I knew of him as an actor. I knew of him as the guy who was played Renfield and Dracula, and I'd seen him in a few different places, and he played me a CD, and I was like, what's this? You know, the first time I heard Blood Money by Tom Waits, I really, you know, heart stopped. It's like nothing I've ever heard before. And I just went on a buying spree and I've got 20 albums, whatever he's done, a ridiculous amount of music. And I absolutely fell in love with him, with what he does. I think it's remarkable. And I've seen him a couple of times live, and what an experience. Like, what he does with music in his approach to music and his sort of individualism and the way he goes about constantly experimenting and seems to be that he's never satisfied with one sound is an absolute inspiration to me, you know.
And he is one of those artists, I think, who constantly kind of reinvents
Who
he is and what he does.
Yeah, that's very inspiring to see. But also the sound and the production techniques that Tom Waits uses is a big influence on me as well. If you listen to his albums all the way through, and obviously the influences are closer to the old time blues guys. You mentioned Leadbelly and Muddy Waters and those kind of guys. But it's honestly, you listen to it and it's just like nothing else. And that's, I suppose, the ultimate inspiration. That's the ultimate goal as an artist, you know.
And how would you describe your style of music? I mean, that's a very difficult question.
That's a tricky one.
But how would you describe it? Because it has been described in various ways as darkly lyrical was one I read.
I think I made that up. Lyrical in terms of it, I don't know. I really want the lyrics to have a point. I don't want just to be words that rhyme. I want that to be a big part of the music when you listen to it. That it is a large element of storytelling. It's all dark, just because it seems to be that's what I can write easier than the happy stuff. So it certainly is dark. And I think there's a lot of blues influence in my stuff. It's not blues music really, but I'm a huge fan of Leadbelly and these guys, so that's been an influence.
Tell me about your day job and how perhaps and how the frustration of that gives birth to some of the creative side.
I'm gonna tread carefully here because I frankly need to pay the bills.
Yes, quite.
It was more to do with the song you're talking about there, which is I presume it's got the tagline "I hate my job." It's not necessarily a vindictive sort of. I'm not trying to get at anyone in particular. That song was written from a place usually about 5 or 6 hours into an 8-hour shift. I'm an admin clerk. Right, and I've done admin all my life while I've been paying the bills, trying to do music, and I've been in a call center and data entry and all this stuff. And that kind of where you're the lowest cog in the works, right? There's no two ways about it. You're the lowest rung on the ladder, and so you just have to get through your day until it's over. And about 5 or 6 hours into an 8 hour shift, there comes a point where you could just tear your eyeballs out. It really is. And it's, and everything around you irritates you, you know. You irritate yourself, the person next to you irritates you. You can't believe you're there, and that's what you're doing with your life. That song was a joke, actually. I wrote these lyrics and showed it to a mate. Wouldn't it be funny if I did this song? Ha ha, throw that away. And then later looked at it and thought, actually, this might be quite fun to put into a song, you know.
Is there part of you, perhaps in 10, 20 years' time, when you're the big, successful rock star, that will do the admin bit for a hobby?
No, of course not.
No, but
I tell you an interesting thing. I was quite pleased with that song. That was a case where I really sort of sat down with an intention to make a song something particular, and it really worked quite well. My idea with the production of the song was for it to sound like a banging of a drum on a galley ship or something like that. You know, it's a song to sort of drive the slaves along, to drive the minions along. That was kind of good.
For me, it has a very kind of warm, kind of Eastern European feel.
I think that's a large part of that is probably to do with the guitar playing, which is a friend of mine called Andrew Foster, who's you should also definitely look up. He's a singer in his own right, but he's a very tremendously talented guitar player, and he did the guitar on that. And I don't know what scale he's using, but I think it's an Eastern scale that he's got going on there. And it's I agree with you.
The Witch's EP, and the Witch's track is the title track of that, is I think a debut EP for you, and is also the first recording with the Box Social.
Your
backing band, as it were. Or I'm sure they're more than that.
Well, do you know what they're the band sort of that I put together to make up that EP. I'm actually going out on my own at the moment and doing a lot of live shows just solo, but there may be a point in the future where I get the band around me again. That would be really nice, but for the moment, if you'll see me live, I'll be on my own.
Okay, so I'm talking to Lars Bridge, and this is a track from his new Witches EP. It's the title track.
There's witches by the fax machine. They plot and jabber little schemes. They're speaking in tongues. They're planning. They send to us to infiltrate their filthy our little spies. Come on, you scum, now you can do it. Come on, put your backs into it. Work the room and mill. Now back chat, curb your mind. We don't take kindly to your kind. Relinquish your free will. And I hate my job. It's all cold and endless slog. And I hate my job.
Let's talk a bit about songwriting, because you strike me as a very strong singer-songwriter, and what I mean by that is that you're a bit of a perfectionist, if you like.
Yeah, I throw an awful lot away. I think I shouldn't sometimes. Maybe that's if I don't really feel it, it's very difficult to describe. For me, there's a particular feeling that you should get that's like you've nailed something, like you've really nailed something, and it's that, and it's also, this is something I haven't heard before. So if I write something and I think I've heard it before, then it goes in the bin and I don't bother with it. And I won't complete a song. Maybe if I just come up with an idea, but it's like you don't get that buzz, or you don't get that little spark of electricity of this is something original that I've made here, that I've created, then I'm not interested in that, really.
So is there a whole Losbridge archive, if you like?
Well, not really, because I just bin them, and I don't, you know. Yeah, I have a lot of lyrics that are, I tell you something, writing lyrics is the hardest part of this for me. It's a real struggle. I really have to wrench them out of myself. But generally, when I get something I'm happy with again, it's like, nailed it, you know, what I'm really happy with. Mm-hmm. I can't just write stuff that rhymes or...
Are you continuously focused on music? And what I mean by that is, in terms of the songwriting process, yeah. Would you say you're fairly methodical, or are you a bit more chaotic and a bit more sort of...
No, very methodical. I don't know whether that's such a good thing, you know, maybe it shouldn't be, because I do really admire songwriters who will be more instinctive and more emotional and it will pour out. But for me, the process of writing a song from start to finish, from sort of conceptual idea to when it's really, to when it's embedded in the set and recorded, is a long, long process, like months, 6 months easily it can take me to develop a song through to the point I'm really, really happy with. But I don't know, like I say, maybe it would be a good thing just to be able to, you know, pour something out in the spur of the moment. But for me, I'm very critical. The songwriting is sort of an art. It's a thing you have to build, for me, you know. It's a thing that sort of you have to lay foundations for, and it takes time. And I heard Tom Waits say about songs, he said him and Keith Richards share the same approach to writing songs, that they circle it from a distance for quite a long time before they then, you know, zero in and figure out what it is. And I really can, you know, I can identify with that.
Mm. Nick Cave, for example, uh-huh. who you cite as an influence, is very interesting in that he treats songwriting almost as a day job. You know, yeah. He has an office.
A lot of people do. I've heard Randy Newman say that as well. Randy Newman, the American songwriter who writes, a lot of his stuff's famous on Disney and stuff like that. But he's an amazing songwriter. I saw a little documentary where he sits down at 8 every morning and works through till 6 at night on his piano writing songs. I think that's brilliant.
Are there particular conditions that have to be right to get into that mode of songwriting?
No, quite the reverse. So maybe it wouldn't work because I found sometimes you go, I need to be working. I'll sit down and force myself to write a song. And very, very rarely does that work. Most times, the best songs will come when you're in the shower and saying you hum in something or something pops into your head. Or when you sit down to mess around the piano and you happen to hit two notes and go, what was that? What was that bit there? And, you know, earlier I was talking to you about the sort of buzz of excitement when you get something right. Well, that's the thing when you go, what was that? I haven't heard that before, you know?
Tell us about the next track that we're going to play. This is a track called By the River, which is from your Witches EP. Tell us what's behind that.
Well, I came up with this track when I was in a band. First band that I was in when I came down to Portsmouth, which is a band called Suburbian, which is a big sort of rock band. And I was doing a lot of writing for that band. And this was a track that I came up with. And I always heard it the way we're about to hear it now. But because we're in a big rock band, it was like, right, here's a new song. Let's put loads of guitars on it and do it. And it was brilliant. It was a big rock track and we loved playing it live. But then the band split up and it was always... We had a whole bunch of songs. I was never really that interested in playing any of them except, there's that By the River track. I always wanted that to be like a creepy, sort of sinister... Deep South, the kind of thing that you'd hear when you were sort of rocking down the river in Georgia or something like that. And you know, it's quite sinister and creepy. And so Andrew Foster, who I mentioned earlier, so happens that he's a good banjo player. So we got him in to play a bit of banjo and we got it together. I'm really pleased with this, actually, really pleased.
There's a real cruelty, I think, to this track.
yeah, this is another one of those that was sort of based around an incident in my work, but it's not necessarily about hating your job. It's just one of my managers was given as a motivational speech or something like that, and it's something about the hypocrisy of the way he was going about it, and that's the line, you sold us out, you know, that thing, it's... And so By the River was kind of a metaphor for an unpleasant place, whatever it might be in your life, an unpleasant place where things have gone wrong and you're sort of down on your luck and you've been sent there by unfortunate circumstances or bad decisions or whatever it may be. Take
the internet today helps songwriters get their product out, essentially. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people think that it makes it easier, you know, in that you can sort of do everything yourself and produce it and record it in your back bedroom, if you like, or in a studio. But in some ways, I think that probably creates more problems in the sense of, you know, certainly recognition, and there are sort of people who will look at the model of record sales and the model of distribution. But how's the internet and things like MySpace and Facebook and other places helped you to get your music to an audience?
It's exactly as you say. In one way, it's been tremendously helpful because, I mean, you can't imagine now a record industry without MySpace, without the internet. You know, it's unthinkable to not to have a web presence now. I always thought, look at MySpace and stuff like that, it's just that it's a fancy telephone number or something like that. It's just, it is a great, you know, business card in a way. It's a way of saying, here's a simple address, somebody can go straight away and find out all about you. So it's good in that respect, but also we're now sort of awash in a sea of music, and it's really easy to access a whole load of great music, but there's also a load of rubbish out there. I don't know.
Do you think the technical quality of music is deteriorating in the sense of not the actual content, but in terms of how we listen to music? So say, for example, everybody these days will be plugged into an MP3 player of some kind, and the quality of that is perhaps lessened.
I'm not so sure about that. I'm quite nostalgic, so I've got a record player and I love sticking a record on and listening to it, but I think that's more in my head than anything else. I have no problem at all with someone listening to tracks on an MP3 player. It's the same music, really, at the end of the day, so that doesn't bother me. You know, there's that a knee-jerk fear of, oh god, it's a new technology, it won't be as good, or you're losing respect for the music. I don't think the music has changed.
Loz, just to finish off, I wanted to just ask you a killer rock and roll question.
Brilliant.
If you like. There's two questions here. One, the first one is, I need to know the answer, ukulele or mandolin?
I'm going to say ukulele, but only because it's closer to a banjo. If you'd have said mandolin or banjo. Mandolin, I tell you the thing about mandolin, it's great if you're covering Losing My Religion, but I can't really, I don't really see much point in it anymore. I don't really like it that much. So now let's veto the mandolin, ukulele.
And the second question, I think I might know the answer to this
right one.
Johnny Cash or Johnny Rotten?
Johnny Cash.
Definitely Johnny Cash.
I'm big into Johnny Cash. I've got into it a lot recently. I put a lot on my iPod and I've been working my way through Johnny Cash. It's fantastic. I can't bear Johnny Rotten. Such a shame as well, because the public loved him briefly. When he was on, what was that programme? The Thing in the Jungle. And I watched that when he was in, and he was great for a while. And then I think he really showed his true colours. And now he's advertising butter. What's that all about? You seen him? He's doing the butter advert. Oh, what's going on? I don't understand. Johnny Rotten's advertising butter, and the other guy's advertising car insurance.
I think there's a few thousand reasons.
I really don't understand how Iggy Pop can do that. Is that irony, or is it? It's like, I'm gobsmacked.
Tell us where we can listen to more of your music and where we can sort of keep tabs on your busy schedule.
The best place to go is to losbridge.co.uk. I've spent a lot of time tarting up recently, so it looks quite nice. And there's links on there to Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/losbridge or myspace.com/losbridge. I'm a big fan of MySpace, but I have a horrible feeling it's dying out. Nobody seems to go there very much. So let's keep MySpace alive.
Thanks for that. Losbridge, thanks very much for talking to me.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Cheers. Take care. Thanks. You can see Lodsbridge live on the 29th of April at the Square Brewery in Petersfield. You can also catch him on the 10th of May at the Half Moon in Putney. For more details about gigs and tickets, check out www.lodsbridge.co.uk. That's it for this episode, but join me next time for more treasured driftwood from the Cultural Coast. Sandy by the Sea is a King of the Buttons production for Express FM. My thanks to Lodsbridge for joining me in conversation and for the use of his